Thanks, Jess.
This meeting is now being recorded.
All right, thanks very much, Jessica. If we could get that first slide. There we go. So I'm getting the next one. Remute. Thanks. So you should see a map of the Grand Mesa site. Again, with the sort of the overarching design, you can see, again, this is focusing on Grand Mesa for now. We'll have a little bit of more information about Senator Beck Basin stuff momentarily. You can see the Grand Mesa sites, the TLS boxes are actually in red on the figure, and they run through more or less A through P, and skipping a few letters of sites that were not scanned. In general, they were relatively small boxes, about 100 to like 300 meters by 100 meters or so, that in general tried to capture an open situation where we could get good GPS points and reception, and moving into the forest, you get transition zones for everything around there. And they span from the western side of the mesa over into the eastern side of the mesa where there's closed forest, and also tried to get access so all the equipment could be run in there from the side. So that there were a lot of layers that went into selecting where these were. Another important aspect is you had the depth transects and pits that were co-located with those sites, and we tried to maximize a number of different measurements there and other data sets that were focused on these TLS areas. All right, so next slide, please. So here are the collection dates. So this correlates with the previous slide locations. So you have now the dates where the snow off scans were done. These were done in the fall before the February campaign, and then also in the February campaign itself. We get back to the, oh, all right. So if you look at the table, you can see which teams did what, and pretty much all the data sets were processed and are in the queue to the handover for NSIDC. I don't know where those are, where they'll be available, or when they'll be available. I know there's quite a backlog of stuff going into NSIDC right now, and they've got their hands full, and hopefully that shows up fairly soon. But again, lots of data set, and some of these also, if you notice, some of the sites were actually done twice during the Snow On campaign, so you also get a little bit of a difference in that surface from Snow On to Snow On again. All right, next slide. So just to give you an idea of what the landscape looks like for various sites, on the top left, we've got Art Gelvin standing out at site B, where it's like there are no trees. It's all sagebrush. So you got an open end location. Also the LSOS site, so there's actually buildings there, which might be good calibration targets for comparisons. Site N, which is kind of open, and also is dominated by lodgepole pine, which is like the only one of the sites that actually has a different tree cover than Engelmann spruce. And site M, which is typical of a lot of the sites, pretty big boles, big trees, not much of a forest understory, and then grading into a meadow there behind there. Next slide. Here we have the snow on. These happened in February during the campaign for our stuff, for the Krell LiDAR, the Leica. We have that out there during the first 2 weeks. So site D gives you an idea of it's not very much surface roughness, pretty broad area, and the scans could go a lot farther. Site B, which was like the sagebrush area, you see there's no exposed sagebrush at all during that scan in February. And then Site A, which is an open area that goes into a forest situation, we were able to get into well into the trees to do scans. So it's on all angles in that. Not a ton of snow remaining in the canopy there, as I recall from a lot of the scans. And then in Site M, which is where one of the Met Towers is, same situation there. A bit of snow down on the ground and not a ton in the canopy. Next slide. Okay, Luke?
Yeah, sorry. I think I was the one who was giving the most amount of feedback. So here's just, we only have one example. We just wanted to really show people what the point cloud looks like. This is an example of site K from the fall. You'll see this is a pretty average point density for the Boise State group. We did, I believe it was 10 scan positions, both in the open areas as well as in the forested area around. But around each site, you'll see you start getting the occlusion shadowing happening from the trees. So we'll talk about this a little bit farther later on in our processing steps that we accomplish. But just wanted to give you an idea of the overall sort of area scale of one of those.
Another
point
cloud, you
is that a question or? Anyway, so going on, so jumping right into processing. So what's going to be available at NSIDC is going to be a collection of both raw and processed data. We're going to try to give all of our data as much as NSIDC will take, basically. And so we have, the GPS was used to collect real-world coordinates for each one of the study sites. We collect using a TopTown Hyper-V, and so we'll supply a raw-based log file that we use for the corrections of our locations. So that's like the main control point that we use. But we also can process those through OPIS later on. But we'll also supply the Megit actual project file from the GPS as well. And so what you'll get in the process, you'll have a base OPIS, so the OPIS corrected location for that base file, as well as a Megit tools processing report. So what error is associated with what, which point, so on and so forth. Also, what projection is it processed to, what GOID, et cetera. And then as far as like, so we're using a Regal VZ1000, or we use the Regal VZ1000 for our field collection. And so what we're going to provide is the raw RISCAN project. And so those who are interested can just go in and start from scratch using the raw GPS and the raw RISCAN project. We're also going to supply a process RISCAN project. So what do I mean by process? I mean the scan positions have been registered and geolocated using the RTK position. And then finally, we're going to be providing raw and processed last files. So the raw last files will be georeferenced, but there will be no clipping or cleaning associated with that last file. And it's going to be at each individual scan location, we're going to provide the output last file from that particular scan position. What we're encouraging people to use, obviously, are the processed, clip the study area, cleaned, georeferenced, and height filtered file that is also going to be uploaded. So what I mean by clipped is what we did is we found the outermost scan positions, we connected them, and then we buffered that connection polygon by 50 meters outward. So that sort of removes a little bit of the occlusion effect that happens around. Yeah, they'll be clipped to that 50-meter buffer around the outside area. And then we've also gone through and cleaned individual scan positions and run them through a program called TerraSolid, which has then further removed, like, erroneous points up in the air just from what happened if there was like a little snow battery or something along those lines. And then finally, it's classified points into vegetation and air. That's what's going to be at NSIDC. And we've started the integration process. We have not uploaded any of our data to them yet. So I believe, Chris, it's back to you.
Okay.
All right. So with the Krell C10, processing products, this data set's actually parallel to Lucas's raw process data, because we didn't clip to anything. We're just providing all the points and unclassified, but everything's been georeferenced with high accuracy and high survey accuracy. So the data were collected with a C10 scan station. So this is a little bit different in that it's a green wavelength and not the near-infrared wavelength, which is an important prospect. And it also it goes completely up into the canopy for the scan. It goes more or less vertical when it's doing the scans. And it's also tied in with a co-registered photos that were taken at the same time over most of the locations. I note that some of the fall scans happened late into the evening where there wasn't that much light to actually get photos. Where available, the photos are included with it. So each point contains a point location for everything, all in the same projection that we had agreed on beforehand. And, you have some information on intensity that's also into the data set. So then you have the final data format, and it's also a .las file. We have differing amounts for fall data and winter data that you can see on the slides. Thanks.
So Jeff
Beams, I'll jump in here. Let's see. I'll start with a similar slide to where Luke and Chris ended. So the CU, my group, and the RSGIS group at Krell, Pete Godomsky, I think, is on the phone here as well. We used a Regal VZ 4000 long-range terrestrial laser scanner, and we got data in Grand Mesa during the fall campaign, and then we spent the winter campaign exclusively in Senator Beck. Brief overview of our workflow here. Again, the VZ 4000 was the instrument post-processed using the Regal software to extract the point clouds. The point clouds are registered using a PPK GNSS survey and then co-registered using multi-station adjustment to make the point clouds match up, and then post-processing for point classification and feature extraction and snow depth calculation was done using Poodle. Of note, the intensity field, we actually populated that with a calibrated reflectance, which is a feature of the Regal scanners, where it's a range-corrected intensity, in effect. We also reduced the data density predominantly at ranges close to the scanner by using a 2-centimeter octree. That reduces the data volume quite a bit without really losing anything. We have classified outlier points using a distance from our closest point threshold and then classified ground, not ground, using a progressive morphological filter. I'll show an example of that in a second. And then we did a point-to-raster snow depth calculation. Interesting, and this is sort of a there's a number of ways to do this, but the LAS format is a little spotty in terms of storing non-conventional attributes. So we stored snow depth values per point in the GPS time field, which otherwise is sort of a useless field as far as TLS goes. And then everything is compressed to the LAZ format. Backing up to show a little bit of what we did. So we designed our field survey to capture a variety of terrain and less so to capture complete coverage. Particularly looking for multiple look angles on steep terrain and keeping common tie points between scan positions. The range of the scanner combined with the size of the basin meant that efficient travel and workflow was paramount. So we skied all the way to the top of the basin and then worked downhill from there. We used reflectors as control points for registration, and as I mentioned, we did a PPK GPS survey to georeference everything. We had 2 days in the fall in Senator Beck to get the snow-free data, and that's both above and below tree line. The background picture there is looking at the upper study plot, and the inset is looking at the Swamp Angel study plot. You can see the Met Tower and precip gauge in the background there. And then winter, we had 2 weeks in Senator Beck. There's Pete hamming it up, and I'll call your attention to the Heimstra death spiral in the background down there. And there it is in the scan data. So this example is colored by snow or ground or not ground. So you can see the snow depth, manual snow depth spiral in the center of the Swamp Angel plot there, and then the morphological filter is doing a really good job of classifying ground and not ground in the tree subalpine environment here. And here is another just quick example of snow depth from the TLS. So colored by white is deeper. Didn't put a scale on there, sorry. The blues are shallower. And then obviously there's gaps where the TLS couldn't see, and this is overlaid on a hill shape from the ASO LIDAR. And that's it for there.
Okay, are we doing a comparison now? Does somebody have my slides?
Giuseppe, can you put up Brian's slides?
Or are we going to do an ASO
I'll do that.
Discussion? Can you guys hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Ryan. Giuseppe, can you put up Ryan's slides? And can anybody who is not speaking as a speaker please mute their phone? Thank you.
Okay, Ryan, it's all yours.
Okay, great. So thanks to everybody for providing us with these data. We've been trying to just compare the ASO data to the TLS data. So comparing lasers with lasers and to see what they get in terms of, or both provide in terms of elevation. So for this, for these purposes, I'm just going to focus on one site. We can go to the next slide. That's TLS site K. This is what Luke was talking about earlier. And for those familiar or who went to the campaign, it's right along the road between Mesa Lakes Lodge, where we had breakfast, and snowmobiles at Grand Mesa Lodge. So the next slide. And the first thing we noticed when comparing the Airborne Snow Observatory LIDAR data to the TLS data is that they are both with respect to different datums. So this results in, you're just looking at the snow off surface or the snow on surface and about a 16-meter difference because the TLS data, as was mentioned earlier, was referenced to the NAVD88 geoid, while ASO data is with respect to the WGS84 ellipsoid. So we used PDAL along with B datum, which is a NOAA-based service, to transform these point into the same projection. So now they're both, ASO is with respect to the NAVD 88. And next slide. So this is just a screenshot from this V-Datum service through NOAA, transforming the points, or one point, from the WGS-84 ellipsoid to the NAVD-88 geoid using the GEOID-12B model. And you'll notice that there was about 16-meter differences between that transformation. And V-Datum is saying that there is about a 7.6-centimeter vertical uncertainty with that due to that transformation, which I would advocate in future SNOWX campaigns that while all the TLS groups got together and said we'll reference everything to the NAVD-88 geoid, I think it would make processing easier and remove this uncertainty if all the other services were collected data to the same data. So next slide. When going from the point cloud to the raster, we've been experimenting with different classifications, but for the results I'm showing today, we use LazTools, a licensed version, specifically the function within LazTools called LazGround. We chose these parameter values, which were based on comparing snow off photos from when we were there on the ground to what the LiDAR data was seeing, or to make sure we weren't getting trees, and we were trying to remove the grasses or any shrubs on the ground as well to get the ground beneath the shrubs. Once we had these points classified, we were gridding them using LAS tools again with the LAS grid function, and we took the average of all the grids and gridded these to a spatial resolution of 1 meter. So next slide. So this is TLS site K, and this is just comparing the snow off surfaces between ASO and TLS. So what we found was that TLS was consistent. This is when they're in the same vertical datum, but it was consistently higher in elevation compared to ASO by roughly 70 to 80 centimeters. This is outside of this polygon that Luke was talking about earlier, but the red box is showing areas with inside that polygon, and we're still seeing differences on the same of the same magnitude. The dots are representing, in this case, you really only need to concern yourself with the gray dots, and that's where the snow off TLS scans were located. And I find the area within the red box relatively interesting because they're within the snow. The TLS scan is seeing that location from multiple directions, but differences are flipped with respect to the median value. So there's these bright yellow areas mixed with these bluish areas. So within the snow off surfaces, there's a mean offset about 70 to 80 centimeters, and there's a lot of heterogeneity within those differences as well. So next slide. We were trying to understand why this heterogeneous results existed, and we're thinking it's likely due to the vegetation on the ground, so not the trees, but the tall grasses and, in this area. And in other sites, we have much more significant vegetation, like shrubs and even taller grasses. So this site in particular was relatively smooth. And this is just so you can see what it looks like on the ground. And then the next slide. And then this is a comparison of the snow on surfaces. So again, we have the same relative offset for the same domain, essentially. But these differences look much smoother because the surface is much smoother when snow falls on it compared to the ground. But again, 70 to 80 centimeter differences. Next slide. And then when you compute snow depth from ASO and from TLS, the mean difference between in this area and here, we zoomed in, so we're only within areas within the snow on and snow off TLS scans. You have mean differences on the order of 4 to 5 centimeters between the two. So these offsets kind of go away. But you still see this heterogeneity within the domain, and that's likely what we believe is trouble getting the snow off surface because of those tall grasses. So we're continuing to work on this and understanding where all these differences come from. But those are our results for Site K as of now. And that's it.
And so we've allowed plenty of time for questions while all the people who collected all of the data are on the phone. So if anyone has any questions after seeing this, please go ahead.
Yeah, I've got one real quick one. This is Ed Kim. Can someone say what the error size of the error bars is for the ASO data, both snow-free and snow-on?
Hi, this is Jeff. Error bars, errors that we've calculated for snow depth are on the same order of magnitude that Ryan's calculated here. That's comparing to manual depth measurements. So on the order of 5 centimeters. It's a difficult thing to assess for the individual height data sets without extensive ground control surveys. Typical errors cited for airborne LIDAR accuracy are on the order of 10 centimeters. But the snow depth gets errors get beat down because we actually snap snow-free targets together for relative registration.
So, this is Chris. Just a couple of comments that might help out additionally is, so we did the survey, Art and I did the ground survey in July, and those data should be coming out here momentarily. So you have like all the transects and all the snow pit points, all those surfaces are there somehow that might be helpful for an independent data set. And another point, wasn't there an overflight or at least some of the area in that was done in like June of, what was it, 2016 or something? That might help in terms of like looking at canopy changes in a sort of a recently snow off situation versus the fall of 2015.
Chris, I think we got a hold of those points, the GPS points that you collected, and when comparing, using the nearest grid cell of a 1 meter gridded. Data resolution, snow off surface compared to those GPS points. For a number of them, we found similar differences to what we found when comparing it to the TLS data, in terms of the ASO snow off data. And I think this just goes back to ASO, using a relative difference to compute snow depth. And things like that.
Hey, Ryan, this is Joel. Did you guys take a look at the time difference between the scans in ASO and TLS and if there's any accumulation between those periods?
So these comparisons are the snow on dates are the same day, and the snow off dates, I believe, are about a week. so there shouldn't be much vegetation change. And it looked like a nice day, so not much melt. But considering the same day or not much accumulation.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Are there any more questions?
This is Anne. I have a question. This is regarding the ASO data. And I have a student who's been using the ASO data to just calculate the forest density and compare those with the snow pits. She's looking at snow characteristics in forested and open areas. And maybe it's the horizontal offset, and I didn't realize that it was that significant, but what she's found is that there are a number of snow pit locations where the forest density is listed as, 60% or more or something like that. But the ASO data show that it's open, like zero, and vice versa. So we're not sure where the discrepancy lies, if it's in the datum or if it's some potential error with the way that the locations are recorded on the data sheet. And I'm looking for some guidance, like where to start trying to resolve this.
Hey, Anne, it's Kat Borman here.
Hi, Kat.
Hi. Just about the, on the horizontal accuracy of, I would say, our 3-meter data, probably our point cloud. We've had closely working on looking at different times and sort of different overpasses and seeing how they're characterizing the trees. And that was Antonio Perez, and he found that our horizontal accuracy was somewhere within the meter or 1.2 meters max. So that's the kind of scale that we're thinking our horizontal accuracy is at with our RORA sets of our data, if that helps.
Okay. Now I'm confused. So what was the difference in horizontal accuracy then between ASO and the ground-based LIDAR?
I'm not sure. Right?
I was comparing vertical accuracies.
Wasn't there somebody mentioned a 16-meter horizontal offset?
That is a vertical offset, and that's just because out of the box, ASO is referencing up to an ellipsoid, which is a different reference.
Okay, hold on a second. Wait. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. There's somebody on the line that doesn't have their phone muted, and they're flushing a toilet. Can you mute, please? It's just really disconcerting. I'm so sorry to interrupt, but this is bad. So please mute. Okay, so sorry to interrupt. I understand what you're saying about the vertical accuracy, but I heard early on that something about the difference between the datum that ASO was using versus the TLS, that there was a 16-meter horizontal location difference. Did anybody else hear that, or maybe I misunderstood?
Maybe I misspoke, but that's not what I was trying to say. And I'm just saying the vertical reference point, an ellipsoid versus a geoid, and those differ. So you have to transform the data so they both are referencing the same elevations, so the same datum.
Well, we're not using the elevation, so maybe that's not such an issue. But what we are using are the horizontal locations for comparison with the snow pits. And we're finding that there's a significant disagreement with the recorded forest densities on the paper data sheets compared with the forest densities that we're estimating from the ASO LIDAR data. And we're wondering if maybe if anyone else has seen issues with locations being off on the data sheet, perhaps.
So, yeah, and when we worked, so Ludo, me, HP, and Kelly worked with the transcription. Is that what you're referring to, the transcription of the positions from the pit?
We're actually looking at the actual photographs of the data sheets, and we can't.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not. Yep. We weren't sure about the transcription, so we went all the way back to the originals.
Okay. Well, we did identify a bunch of problems with some of the locations, but it wasn't a huge number. But there were a number of those that were fixed and are in the soon-to-be-released data set for the pits.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good then. Yeah, and this wasn't a huge number either. It's just that we were wondering, like, how we just needed some guidance on how to fix that.
So they're using handheld GPSs too in forest situations. So my guess is that error is probably closer to 10 to 15 meters for the pit location for a user.
Okay.
And writing that down is my guess. But I mean, that depends, and that's like on the thick end, like really high. Most of the time, it would probably be like 5 to 6 meters or something like that for those handheld GPS.
Mm-hmm. Is there a way to correct those locations then?
There are some of the correct locations that are from the survey data. So when we were able to find some of the red poles and things for where those pits were located, those were surveyed in. And those are also in that data set that should be out.
Okay. When do you think that'll be available?
I'm not sure, like, Steve or...
I can jump in here, Chris. Those data were published just recently. They're alive, the snow pit data. And the TLS data, Chris's and Luke and Nancy's should be up probably early July would be a safe bet.
Okay, great. Thanks.
I had a question for this is Ed about the different datum. When you convert, is there obviously there's a vertical difference? Is there also a horizontal difference?
There shouldn't be because they're well. Actually, I'm not sure, but. Thinking about that, that is something we should definitely consider. On the V datum website, and I don't believe it says there is a uncertainty associated with that. But I believe they were both referenced to the WGS 84 ellipsoid in terms of horizontal positions. I might be misspeaking.
Yeah. Well, a follow-up to that, just a thought for everybody who's, you know, everybody in the community and beyond who's going to try to be using these data sets. I mean, it's great that you identified that there is, you know, a datum difference and that a conversion has to be done if you're comparing the airborne to the TLS. Is there going to be, like, just even a one-pager that summarizes that fact so that people don't have to, otherwise maybe I think we want to avoid a situation where that fact is documented, you know, in each individual TLS data set. It'd be nice if there was just one overarching one pager somewhere that said, hey, anybody who's using the TLS data and trying to compare it to the airborne data, beware, and here are the this is the datum that was used for the TLS. Here's the datum that we used for the ASO. This is what you have to watch out for when you try to use the two data sets together. And, you know, whether there's a vertical offset or a horizontal offset, et cetera. Just trying to make it, you know, put the documentation consistently and hopefully just in one place for everybody.
Ed, the metadata for those different data sets will contain their spatial reference information. So I would think any user looking to compare things, that would be one place to start.
Okay.
I don't know that we need a separate white paper for, you know, every possible combination of SNOWx data sets looking out for things like that.
Well, no, I'm just thinking that, you know, just specifically between the ASO and the TLS, rather than, you know, somebody having to go and discover that through individual data sets. But, okay, I guess I could see that working too.
All right, if there are no further questions, last call, and then we can thank our speakers. I don't know, can you applaud on this? Any last questions?
I had one comment, and that is I'll be giving an overview presentation at the upcoming Eastern Snow Conference, so if any of you that presented stuff today want to send me, you know, like one slide, I can try to put that into the overview presentation. Actually, anybody who's on the phone who's got any material who'd like to, you know, who might be interested in having that included in an overview presentation, please feel free to send it to me.
Jessica, can you also comment whether we are going to want to share the materials that were presented today to everyone?
Pardon me?
I'm talking about the presentation from today. If you want us to share them, I will need all those slides, and then I'll post them somewhere on the snow.nasa.gov website.
All right. Well, we can follow up with that with the speakers after. That sounds great. And we will try to, in another few months, have another discussion about another data set from SNOWx so people can learn about what's out there. Thank you, everyone, and thank you so much to all of the speakers for putting this together.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.